to another edition of The Cine Skinny, the podcast from the people behind The Skinny magazine. It's Jamie Dunn here, and I'm still at Glasgow Film Festival chatting to some of the talented guests visiting with work this year. And perhaps the most anticipated of these guests is the mighty Viggo Mortensen, best known as Aragorn from Lord of the Rings, but also for his performances in countless other brilliant films like A History of Violence, Eastern Promises, Captain Fantastic, The Road, and many, many more. Mortensen was in town for the UK premiere of the sinewy western The Dead Don't Hurt. As well as starring in the film alongside Vicky Creeps, Mortensen also wrote, directed and produced The Dead Don't Hurt. He even composed the music for the film. He's a very talented man. The Dead Don't Hurt is clearly a labour of love, and it seems to have gone down a treat with Glasgow audiences. Set in 1860 in a small Nevada outpost, the film is both a beautiful homage to the great westerns of the past and a subversion of this most macho of film genres. It centres on the romance between Mortensen's character Olsen, a Danish carpenter, and Creeps' character Vivian, a fiercely independent French-Canadian woman who grew up dreaming of being Joan of Arc. The film begins with Vivian's death, and then from there the story of Olsen and Vivian's life together is told using intersecting flashbacks. As actors, Mortensen and Creeps are a match made in heaven. Every scene with them together is a joy. They're ably supported by a cast that includes Danny Hewson, Garrett Delahunt, and the young Scottish actor Solly McLeod, who plays a British psychopath who will change both Vivian and Olsen's life forever. We sat down with Viggo Mortensen and his young co-star, Solly McLeod, to discuss the film. Take a listen. So, how have you been enjoying Glasgow so far, Viggo?
Well, I've not honestly seen the city much at all, because I've been doing interviews and showing the movie, and I've only been here a day and a half, really. But so far, it's great. Of course, it helps when you have great audience reception to the work that we've done, and that really helps.
Absolutely.
So people were very welcoming of the movie and welcoming of us, so I couldn't be happier.
Though Solly did mention you were doing some whiskey drinking, or was that just Solly? Did I?
No, we did. We had some preparation for the movie presentation.
Oh, was it Dutch Courage?
Of the local elixir, and... well, from different areas of Scotland. And then last night, they were kind enough to give me, as part of the award, was a nice bottle of whiskey. And that's, I don't know what happened to that.
It's got, you drank it.
Yeah.
My friend, it's gone.
We drank it. His family was down from Orkney, which was great.
Well,
yeah.
And we had dinner. We had a liquid dinner last night.
Well, this is hanging out with Scots. You know, you're going to drink a lot. What struck me first by watching the film was this was made by somebody who really loves westerns. I'm just wondering what drew you to that.
You felt that watching it?
I think so, yeah. I remind me of lots of great westerns that I've seen.
Cool.
John Ford.
Hawks,
yeah.
Oh, good. Yeah, well, that was the idea. Once I realized it was going to be a western, I wanted to respect, I guess, the canon or certain traditions of the best of classic westerns. So the way it's shot, the way it looks, accuracy historically in terms of costumes, design, language, reflecting what society would have been back then, which is not so different than now, just very multicultural and multilingual, melting pot. All those things you want to do with the significant difference of having a woman, which is not the norm in classic westerns, being at the center of the story. And when her male companion goes off to war, we stay with her, and it's really about her. And it's a love story between the two of them, but it's centered on her, and that's unusual, I suppose. But we weren't trying to reinvent the form.
Yeah. I guess actually even having Solly, though, as the villain is slightly atypical as well. You know, having the younger character be the villain is quite interesting. So, Solly, how did you feel, you know, getting that character? In fact, how do you just get involved in the process? Maybe a good place to start.
Yeah, I mean, the process, it's unlike any audition process I've ever had for any other job. In a good way, I think. You know, it was surprising. I didn't expect it. And my agent gave me a call saying, asking if I've heard of an actor called Viggo Mortensen. And I said, yeah. I think so. And he said, Viggo wants to give you a ring on Monday, and I think it was a Friday, he called me, give you a ring after the weekend and speak to you about a role in his new script that he's going to direct. So Viggo called me and explained the character, explained the premise of the story, and then said, I'll send you the script, and if you hate it, you let me know, and You sent it over and I read it, and I thought it was fantastic. The script, standalone, was a wonderful thing to read, and I enjoyed it. I read it in one sitting all the way through.
Yeah.
I think I held off on sending an email right back. I kind of waited a couple of days to send. And the role that he'd envisioned for me, or thought I could do, was far bigger than I expected. And I was instantly on board, pretty much. And we kind of had a few discussions after that and spoke through the script and the accent, getting the accent right for the character, and talking about how we want him to be and come across. And yeah, we went from there, and then you said, let's do it.
And what were you looking for? What made Sully stand out?
I was looking for someone who had a really strong presence,
which he does,
and not any kind of a cliche nemesis or bad guy. I needed an actor who was skillful and somewhat daring, I guess, in that it's a complicated character. He, being a sociopath, basically, he can be extremely charming, but he can also be, you know, at the drop of a hat, he can suddenly, unexpectedly sometimes, be brutal, you know, just mercilessly savage, and have no moral, you know, compunction about it. And to go from one thing to another, sometimes in the same scene, and then there's another layer, you know, a relationship with his father, which he has one scene in which to get that across, how complicated that relationship is. And no matter how brutal he is, and the fact that he's holding a gun, he still could be himself intimidated by his father, for example. Things like that, you know, demand a lot of an actor. You have to have a certain amount of range and intelligence and subtlety to make it really work. And Solly did that, you know, more than I could have dreamed of.
Yeah, layering that dangerous confidence that he has with the, you know, he could switch at any moment and shoot everyone in the room. You know, it's like we wanted to have that tension for the audience on screen where he comes into a scene and you don't know which way it's going to go.
Yeah, he could be in a good mood today and stay that way, or he might halfway through the scene just shoot someone or beat the shit out of them, you know.
Yeah, and part of that tension comes from your interest in structure, which is kind of not typical of West Westerns either. So we open knowing that he's a killer, but the characters don't.
I like that. The audience has that secret. I like when he goes to pay her a nice Sunday visit, beautiful day, she's gardening, and he couldn't be more of a gentleman, right? But the audience is saying, no, don't speak to him. You're all alone with this. You know, we know what he is to some degree. And so that's an interesting thing. When you structure it that way, the audience knows. The audience is ahead of the characters, yeah.
Yeah. But you also used kind of flashbacks a lot in your previous film, Falling, as well. So what draws you to that kind of more kind of avant-garde kind of structure?
Well, I don't know that I'll always do that. I mean, I've written a few other stories. And let's see, 3-4 of them. Only one of them has a little bit of that. The other three are linear. But in these two stories, it seemed the most... The first one, for some reasons that are fairly obvious, it had to do with dementia and, you know, memory and shared memory and how different the memory of the same event in a Rashomon sense is for each individual, especially within a family. But I kind of like, for both these stories, showing the effect before the cause. You know, so even though my first images were of the little girl running through the woods and her fantasy world, I thought, oh, who does she become? And so I said, well, let's go right to the end, literally, of her life, and then build backwards from there. Not completely backwards. It sort of comes back and forth and into the present. And then there's another string which has to do with what happens to my character, Olsen, when he goes off. So there's sort of three threads. And writing it was kind of a jigsaw to put it together so that it flowed, shooting it, and then in editing, tweaked it a little bit more. I knew that, same with Falling, you know, the first movie, I trust the audience and its intelligence, but it's not going to be the usual spoon-fed thing. You know, the first 20 minutes or so, you're putting pieces together. Like, okay, okay. But once you have those pieces, then you can build your own structure. In other words, from then on, less is more in terms of information, and the audience will put together the rest as they go along, and it becomes their movie, which I like. I make the kind of movie that I would like to see, an audience where I can participate. And so by the end of the story, it's my story. You know, it's not the director's, and that's the way it should be. That's the kind of stories I like. So, you know, you never know what an audience is going to do. I had no idea that the audience would be so receptive yesterday and laugh and get everything and understand and be into it. You can only make, really, I think, as an artist, as a filmmaker, not that you can only make. I prefer when the director is obviously making a story to please themselves first. They want it to, or an artist does that. It's a business too, and the more expensive a movie is to make, the more pressure there is to appeal to all demographics and try to please everyone. But I think when you do that, you tend to make something that's neither one thing nor another. Tries to be everything, and it becomes watered down. And that happens
dilute,
a lot.
Yeah, you say watered down, dilute the whole story you're trying to get across anyway, and the characters are diluted, and people think they relate, but they don't.
There's a little something for me in my community, and there's a little something for it's kind of like, so what did you think of the movie? It was okay. I mean, you know, they covered all the bases.
Yeah.
But that's not what you want to hear. You want to hear, I was moved.
Yeah.
It transported me.
Learned
it
something.
It made me think.
Yeah.
I'm sure I agree with everything. It made me mad. It made me happy. It made me sad. I don't know. You know, that's the kind of stories I like, but they're hard to get financed and they're hard to get distributed. But if they do work, people are grateful. Audiences are fine.
Yeah, and I think one of the most moving parts of it is Vicky Creeps. I think she's fantastic. And as good as you guys are, I think she's
tremendous.
She takes the cake.
So, and your scenes together are so different. You know, obviously Olsen with Vivian, you know, it's very romantic, very funny. And then obviously your character Solly is completely different. So can you talk maybe about working with Vicky and both of you, how you dealt with those different scenes?
Well, yeah, I mean, having Vicky as a scene partner made me better in those scenes. She's so present and so subtle and nuanced and really kind of looks at you.
Tests you.
She really tests me, really looks. She was, you know, she was looking at me like she wanted to kill me in some of those scenes. And I was like, okay. And I kind of had to up my game to make sure that it wasn't, you know, the characters weren't drowned out, because both Vivian and Weston, in a way, are there like very strong characters. And yeah, I had to up my game in order to not be drowned out by it, because she's just so fierce, and which is phenomenal. And I came away from the project a better actor, for sure, just not even necessarily being in scenes with her, but watching her play other scenes, watching her play alongside Vigo.
He would come to sets sometimes, which I've done that in my career too. He would come to sets when he wasn't working on days off, which to me as a director was like, great. He likes being in this movie. He's interested in it. It's encouraging, you know, for a director that. And I think the other actors too, that the other actors that are in your troupe
want to know about what you
want to know how you're doing today.
It's quite took the pressure off as well, you know. I got to interact with the crew a lot more. I made friends with loads of people now. It's a wonderful crew.
Working, you can sort of hang and talk to them.
I can hang and talk, so it kind of built that relationship better as well. If I could, I would do that on every project, go and when you're not working, see what the dynamic is on set.
It's
a good idea,
because it's different
and you never know what you're going to pick up. The way an actor, the way a director.
Sometimes you can't, though. You're in the way and it's annoying. But when you can.
If you're discreet and you ask permission, usually they're okay with it.
Yeah.
I think. Some actors can be very fussy and get out of my eye line or whatever. And I understand.
But I read as well that you based the character on your own mother. So was there things in Vicky that you saw in your mother, or things in your, and maybe you could talk about how Vivian
connects
to you? Not
necessarily. I mean, Vicky, I mean, I needed an actress who would be really committed to this character, to being independent, to being believable as this character. And, you know, Vicky is unflinching in her commitment to what she's playing. And it kind of doesn't matter if it's suddenly the text is quite not exact or so. It doesn't matter, you know. Eventually she'll get everything perfect. But there's never a moment that's false, you know, and that's very rare. You get a performer who does that, and like Solly says, when someone's so committed, you know, when you're looking at them or they're looking at you, it's, you have no other way out other than to play the scene at the most realistic level possible, because she's in the moment, each moment to moment, she's completely there. And she does also have that gift, you know, which the camera either sees that or doesn't. And with her, what she's feeling, what she's thinking, if you don't know exactly what it is, you know something's going on all the time. It's coming through her pores. It's coming out of her eyes. She's, whether she looks at you or not, just you can't take your eyes off what she's doing.
Yeah.
You know, even if she's in the background of a scene, let's say the bar scene when you're beating him up, the moment when you see her and she's looking, you're involved in what she's thinking.
Yeah, you know? 100%.
It's interesting, Sully, you were saying you were observing Viggo working. And Viggo, I presume throughout your career, you've observed great directors and you've worked with people like, you know, David Cronenberg, an actress.
I've had to watch many good actors.
I was interested, though, as a director, what have you picked up from people like, you know, doing three films with Peter Jackson, doing three films with David Cronenberg? Anything specific?
I mean, from some directors, you can learn more about what not to do. That's really important sometimes. In terms of how you relate to people, the crew, the cast, how you communicate with actors, how you solve problems. Don't freak out. It's like, okay, well, I don't know what to do. Let's work it out together. The main things is the more prepared everyone is, the more people have an understanding, a collective understanding of what's to be attempted from day to day, the more relaxing it'll be and the more fun, the more everyone will feel involved, crew and cast. And the more chances are that you'll have time to take advantage of some freak thing that happens, an accident, a stumble, or that line wasn't meant to be there, but maybe that's good, rather than, oh, I'm trying to focused, I'm trying to figure out what to do today, that I didn't even see that, I didn't hear that. And I could have taken advantage of that if I'd been prepared and relaxed. The weather changes. What do we do? Okay, well, or this scene's not working, we're going to have to run off and do something else. But let's do it calmly, because we know what we can do.
Yeah.
We know what that scene would be. What the shots are, what, you know, what the actors are expected to do. They know their lines, all that stuff. And the best directors are calm because they've prepared really well and they're intelligent enough to understand that anybody in the crew, anybody in the cast might say something, even if they're not talking about the scene, that inspires you. Or they might have a suggestion. What if this was this way? And if they feel comfortable doing so, not scolded for it. Once in a while, you'll get some genius idea from someone, or it'll inspire some change in the day, in the plan of the day, that's going to make the movie better. You'd be foolish not to take advantage, but some directors are not. They're insecure and they don't listen and they don't know. They're afraid to talk to their crew and cast almost.
Were there any examples of that you can think of on The Dead Don't Hurt? Any sparks of impression?
There are many. Just little things. I mean, you know, when Solly shot his first scene, which, you know, in retrospect, it was probably, I mean, I thought of it on the day, you know, it's probably a lot of pressure. You know, this is first day work and it's one of the most intense scenes. Happens to be the first time we see him in the movie.
An all one shot.
It's all one shot. There's a lot of pressure on the crew and on the actors. I mean, especially on him, because he has to walk out. And I didn't say you have to walk this way. I wanted to see how he would do it before saying anything, if I had to say anything. And I loved the way he was walking. I loved the way he handled his weapon. I liked the way he approached the horse. I mean, he obviously worked really hard on that. There was very little to say other than just little tiny technical adjustments, and especially for the camera, before we got the shot we wanted. So that's being open. It's like, oh, he brought that to it. I like that. I like that he did that. I didn't imagine that. That's great. Or if it's something that's interesting but it's not great, you can say, well, we have that. Let's try this, you know. But, I mean, people came with, you know, and Vicky came with, you know, there would be moments that were funnier than they were meant to be, or where she was intense in a way that I didn't expect in a certain moment in the scene, or that it was, by not pushing for an emotional result, they were more emotional, you know, things like that that the actor does. And rather than be inflexible as writer and director, and say, oh, that's not how I imagined it. Why is she doing that? It's like, oh, well, maybe that's even better, you know? Those sort of things, the unspoken things. And then sometimes someone in the crew would, cinematographer obviously, would say, well, I know you want it to be this profile shot when she's deciding, makes this decision, no, I'm staying, I'm not going to be running out of town. Which is what it, and he said, well, it could be a slightly from behind her. I said, oh, yeah, that's even better. You know, just little things like that as you go along. It's an accumulation of listening, considering, rejecting, or accepting, and moving on.
I think we got the shout for last question, but I was just going to ask them, what are you doing next? So you've got a project. Are you working on any directorial projects right now? And then, Solly, you can save if you get anything coming up.
I have a few scripts. It's just whatever one I find financing for first. And, yeah, that's it. Trying to put this one out as best we can first and trying to get the money to make another one.
Is there any type of film you're trying to make? Any other genre? Or
I have four different ones. One of the four, this is the one I'd most like to make, but it's the most ambitious. It's a kind of Western as well, but it's only with indigenous, with Native Americans in it. I really like that story a lot. And I that's the one, if I had my druthers, but it's a tricky one. If this movie comes out and does well, then maybe somebody will take a chance on it.
So,
Yeah, I can't say very much, but I'm shooting something in Glasgow for the next 5-6 weeks. So just see me around. That's all I can say.
So you'll get to know the city well.
Yeah, I'll get to know the city well.
Okay.
People will hopefully find out soon. As soon as I can share it, I will. You know.
Will you go back to that pub?
Yeah, but where we went.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Okay. What's this pub?
We should do it tonight. Where,
you'll
right?
get free drinks if you mention it on the podcast.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, thanks for chatting, guys, and best of luck with the movie.
So a big thank you to Viggo and Solly for speaking to us. If you missed the Dead Don't Hurt at Glasgow Film Festival, do not worry. The film will release sometime this summer by Signature Entertainment. And for more information about what's on at Glasgow Film Festival, head to theskinny.co.uk/film for all our GFF coverage. That's all from me. See you next time. Bye.